Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger. And today I have the special privilege of interviewing Sandy Williamson. She has competed in 18 competitions, judged for 38 years, and has been the NPC Women's Chairperson for 34 years. She has traveled to 32 countries, and during most of her time while judging, she has worked as a full-time RN. She is the most detailed note taker and gives the most valuable feedback as she stays late at shows to talk with competitors so that they can grow in the sport. I personally appreciate your time that you always spend with me and your smile on your face when I step on stage. It always makes me feel so good and you just seem so attentive. So Sandy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm so glad that you're here. And I just wanted to start out by asking you what inspired you to compete.
Well, as you know, as a child, I grew up with five other brothers and sisters, and I was the only one that was not really active. And back then, parents, I don't think, really realized how important nutrition, you know, was to children's stuff. So by the time I was in eighth grade, I was well over 200 pounds. And so I spent most of my childhood up until my senior year in high school, you know, extremely heavy, which, and we all know that, you know, kids are can be very cruel to other children. But then I went into nursing school, and by the end of nursing school, though, I was 5'7½" when I graduated, and I weighed 72 pounds. So definitely lost my weight. Also, obviously became anorexic, even though anorexia at that time was not even, you know, was not a disease entity and stuff. But I also, you know, because of poor nutrition, I had kwashiorkor, which is what you see in children lots of times in African and third world countries when they don't have enough protein because your body starts to eat your own muscle. So I started to get that extended belly, you know, had trouble functioning at work, and they actually thought I had leukemia because, like I said, at the time, yeah, anorexia was not, you know, two things saved my life. One was they made me, you know, they pulled me from work and made me go to a doctor, and they gave me a choice at two. And I went with a female doctor, and she had just been, she was new internal medicine, just been to a seminar in the Philadelphia area, because I grew up outside Philly. She had been to a seminar there that talked about this new disease entity they were seeing with young women, and it was anorexia. And she firmly believed that's, you know, that's what I had. So, where I was a little bit different from a lot of anorexias, because a lot of times when you're anorexic for that long and you're that, you know, depleted, you're very manipulative. And so most of the time they have to hospitalize anorexics at that level, but I talked my way out of it. But I did. I was scared enough that I did start to eat, but I started to eat, like, again, things that I thought were like low calorie. Again, protein has a lot more calories per, you know, program than carbs and stuff. And so I just ate a lot of, I didn't eat a lot of protein. I ate a lot of, you know, carbs, because I could eat a whole thing of salad, you know, for a, you know, compared to a tiny little chicken breast. So I still wasn't getting the, you know, the proper nutrition and stuff. But my sisters had graduated from high school. They were very active, and they started running like on a track and stuff. And as you know, I'm very social, so I didn't want to be left out. So I decided that was something I could do too. And man, so I started running and ended up doing a couple marathons and stuff. So obviously I became active. And at the time, at least in our area, there was no, my ex-husband was a power lifter. So he worked out in a gym and stuff, but there was no co-ed gyms in 1980 in Reading, Pennsylvania. So I started going to a women's health spa, and I was doing, like, you know, I'd come home to my ex-husband and say, like, you know, I did 100 reps at 10 pounds on a leg press. And he would look at me and go, what the heck would anybody do that for? Like, well, I want to put muscle on, but you don't want to get big muscles. You know, I don't want to be this huge, you know, female and stuff. And so, maybe 6 months into my, you know, my journey into weightlifting, a bunch of his friends decided to go to a bodybuilding show in Philadelphia. And again, I did not want to go. I did not want to see women bodybuilders. I had no idea what they were, but I didn't want to see them. But again, social, weekend away, a lot of seminars and stuff. Didn't realize at the time that I was seeing people like Franco Colombo and his wife do seminars, and Frank Zane and his wife do seminars. Oh my God, I can't even remember all the different, male athletes. But we went to obviously what turned out to be the first Miss Olympia. Yeah, and it was set up as a dinner theater. So I don't remember exactly how many women I know. I can Google. I don't remember how many women were on stage, but it was maybe, 10, 15, I mean, 15, 20 or so. But I just remember when Rachel McLish, and some of the women walked around, and I saw, she was like, because, they were dressed then after, it was after the dinner, they'd walk around and talk to people. She was in like a size one jean.
Oh my gosh.
I was at the Y Monday morning.
That's awesome. So, did they let you lift weights at the Y?
Nope.
Oh, wow.
Women could join the Y, at least in Reading. Women can join the Y, but they weren't allowed in the weight room.
Oh my goodness.
I know when I say that to young women, they go, "Oh my God, that you can't do that." And it's like, this is 1980. You could do a lot of different things tonight, in 1980. But it just so happened there was another female that was into lifting, and I mean, she, looked like she had been into lifting. I mean, just really a nice physique and stuff. And she had been petitioning the Y. And so it took us about, I want to say, a couple months. And then finally, we were allowed down to do weight training. So then I started lifting with my husband and his partner. And really, the rest was history.
Wow, it's
I
so
know.
crazy how short of a time span we have all these freedoms as women that we don't realize. But that really makes you appreciate that.
Well, it's the world. People don't realize like how quick I think the world is changing. You know what I mean? Because this isn't, we're not talking about something that my mother or my grandmother dealt with. This was myself, and it's only 50 years ago, So yeah, no, it was. And I don't even know why, where I don't know why I started, like, I'm not sure if it was myself or my ex-husband at the time, but obviously I started lifting in 80, and then in 81 I was going to do a competition, obviously. And I love when people at girls ask me and they say, "Well, what division did you compete in?" And you go, "There was only one in 1981. It was bodybuilding. Nothing else came about." People forget nothing else came about from 1980 to 1995. There was nothing but women's bodybuilding. Because we did our first fitness slash, which then became figure in 1995. So yeah, I did, obviously bodybuilding, but again, small world, things happen for a reason. But my first contest was in the Pittsburgh. I don't know that it was actually called the Pittsburgh Championship, but it was at Soldiers and Sailors in Pittsburgh. Yeah. That was the first time I ever stepped on stage. Who would have thought I'd be judging there at the same venue? Almost 50 years, almost 50 years later.
That's incredible. So, how did you transition into becoming a judge?
My God. Yeah, it's just, like you don't realize like little things that through your life actually end up making, changing the direction of where your life's gonna go. But and again, most of your listeners won't know this, but there at the time when I first went out to my first show, my ex-husband had had a industrial accident, so he could not go with me. So I went by myself, and I met a couple there, Frank and Candy Senses. Candy at the time was one of the up and coming women bodybuilders, and so she took third at that show. They were from my area. And so they kind of took me under their wing, so that I wasn't there by myself and stuff. And so we kept in touch because they only lived about 20, 25 minutes away from us. And I followed her because she became a pro right away, and she went to, I think her first Miss Olympia was 1983, because we went up to Can to Toronto to see her compete and stuff. Well, at the time, the NPC was a male organization. And Candy belonged, and the women belonged to an organization called the AFWB, the American Federation of Women Bodybuilders. And so Candy was already judging for them and kind of helping, like from the administration, was already involved in their administration. So she had con she contacted me and asked me if I wanted to start judging locally, because again, there were no, women locally in our area. And I was like, I don't have no time to judge. I you know, I was a full-time nurse, and back then it was five eighths a week and stuff. And so, but my ex-husband was kind of like, you know, it'll help you maybe with your competition and that kind of stuff. You'll see what judges are looking for. And I seriously, I did not. I like, for me, my life was full. I had so much going on just with my family. I have a big, you know, family and stuff. But I went and did a couple shows, and I want to say I think I judged the very first time. It was either at the end of 82 or 83. And but I was competing like three or four, obviously, because I only competed to 84. So between 81 and 84, I did 18 shows. So you know, I was doing them, you know, all the time. Yes, and I was a, and I was skinny as a, you know, a rail, because I was so worried about, you know, putting any weight on because of my history of anorexia and stuff. And so I wasn't going to let myself grow. But I also didn't have structure. You know what I mean? I did not have structure to be a woman's bodybuilder. And I learned, that's one thing judging did teach me real quick, that, you know, and I started, I'm obviously competitive. And so I loved judging with other people and seeing it didn't matter who I judged with at the table, I was good at it. And so I really did, I became very competitive with my judging. And then in 84, I did one of my last shows. And, you know, again, one of the things that, you know, you don't think about, but I did better at the show than I knew I should have. And, you know, I said to my ex-husband, who was, again, my biggest supporter, but also totally realistic. And he just looked to me, you know why you got third at the show? And I said, no, I don't understand. I should never have been third. He said to me, you're judging with now judges that are judging you. He said, you're going to have to make a decision. But I never thought about that, because in my mind, it's like, well, what does it matter that I'm judging with them if I'm not at that, you know, if my body's not at that, you know, is that not at that level, why? And but my husband's like, Sandy, the world doesn't work like that, you know what I mean, type thing. It's just human nature. So I did, I walked away from that. I was judging for Candy in the AFWB, and then I want to say in 84 the AFWB and the NPC merged, and so I was already judging, you know, for the AFWB. So I kind of was grandfathered in, you know, to judging for the NPC. And at the time, Candy became the woman's chairperson, and unfortunately, a year later, she can't was diagnosed with breast cancer. And again, you know, our medical advances are much better now. She it was already metastasized, so she passed away at 33, and Mae Mollica took over her position. And then Mae was involved with the gentleman that was a political activist. So they up and moved in 1986 and went to one of the Caribbean islands. And so Jim called me and just said, would I, you know, at that time you could fly on somebody else's airline ticket, because Mae was supposed to take Kathy Palio, a female bodybuilder, over to Singapore for the Women's World Championships. And, you know, so I was like, you know, somebody's going to pay my way to go to Singapore. I had the farthest I'd ever been was I'd been to Denver once to judge for them, and you know, been down to Florida with vacations with, you know, my family and stuff. So, you know,
What an
obviously,
opportunity.
oh my God, I went. And you know, when I came back, then Jim asked me if I wanted to be, you know, take over the women's chairmanship. And I was like, nope, not a chance. I said, I'm working full time. I said, you know, he said, well, we, you know, at the time he wanted me to do something. I said, no, I don't mind. I'll help out for a couple months. I said, but you know, you got to find somebody, because I can't do this full time.
And look where we are today.
I know. That's why I, yes, absolutely. As I said, you know, just again, if I would never went to that Pittsburgh championship by myself, I wouldn't have met Candy. If I wouldn't have met Candy, we wouldn't be talking. You know, if Candy wouldn't have got cancer, we probably wouldn't be talking. If Mae wouldn't have left unexpectedly, we wouldn't, you know what I mean? There's so many, yeah. And at the time, you don't realize that one little choice or that one little change in your life can really end up, you know, changing the rest of it in a huge way.
Sure, of course. So you had a new role this year as the first time you promoted a national competition. What did that feel like? What was that experience? Because I know your husband promotes Spectrum
Yes,
Productions, right?
and I know it is, and I've said this to everybody, you know, because my husband and I, obviously, we met each other. We were, you know, in our late 30s. I was 40, he was 39, and you know, he already had that business. He had owned a gym, And he bought, at that time he still owned the gym, which he ended up selling in, I want to say, 1992. So that was his business. He had been promoting since, I think, 82 was, or 83 was the first
Oh,
time
wow.
him.
Okay.
Yeah. So he had been
It's a long
promoting.
time.
So, and again, I was a full-time nurse and I was traveling to, you know, to judge at the national level, you know, which obviously, and he was also the Southern, because at that time, California had three district chairmen. They
Okay.
had a, yes, they had a Southern Cal, down in San Diego area, they had the LA district chairman, and that's what Ted was. Ted was the LA district chairman, and then there was a Northern Cal chairman. So he was the, so he was more locally involved, where obviously I was nationally. So, you know, our paths really, I used to judge here for some of his shows here, but not all, you know, again, not all the time. If we had a national show or gym, you know, if I was going somewhere, like, you know, the world championships and stuff. So I, you know what I mean? So his business has always been his business. And to be honest with you, like I said, I really enjoy judging. I'm very competitive with my judging. I've, like I said, I've been all over the world and doing it. I'll pit myself against anybody from a judging table. And, you know, I, to me, with promoting, I just thought promoters had all my respect and I never wanted to be one of them. Because, well, because you as a promoter, you have so, people have no idea how many people that you're trying to please. You know what I mean? A, obviously the athlete, because you want them to come back. But now that the sport has grown, you want the trainers. You want to do well because you want them to want to bring their athletes back. And, you know, I'm not a seller. I couldn't sell you anything. So to go out and get sponsor money, and it's just things that I never, are not my strengths. Everybody needs to know what their strengths and weaknesses are. And that's just not my, you know, my strength. I love judging. And so, but when Jim asked me and asked me if I'd want to, you know, do it with Robin Chang, who I've known for 30 years, and just, it just, he's an amazing man. I
He is
just,
awesome.
yes, he is one of the nicest, you know, guys that I've met in our sport and stuff. You know, I was like, I just, you know, I couldn't say no. And to be honest with you, I am so thankful I didn't, because I had a, well, I wouldn't say that. Looking back, I had a ball doing it. Through it, I'm not so sure. Since you know, well, I, you know, I ended up, again, just because of time and stuff, I ended up doing a lot of our social media, and you know, I think most people that know me by now know that's, I you know, I didn't grow up on social media. I don't really follow social media. I mean, I don't, get me wrong, I look at stuff with Spectrum to see what they're, you know, stuff, but I don't follow anyone on social media. Like, I can't say that I've ever, you know, if you go to my Instagram, which up to this year it was only for my family, because my nieces and nephews played sports in college, so I could follow their games and that, you know, through that. But I never used it for body, you know, for our for the fitness industry. And so if you go, people, I think, I never thought about it, but because it's the same as my email, people were tagging me and leaving me messages. I only went there once or twice a year when the game, you know, when it was a away game, then I wanted to see how the kids did. I know, and you know, but I did, then last year I broke down and I posted a birthday picture of Jim and I, because obviously we go, you know, he's like a brother to me. We go back 30 some years now. But you know, but for me it was all new, you know what I mean? And so to try to promote the junior nationals, you know, through social media was a huge, huge learning experience. Had a lot of people like Joe Piscula and James Allen in Texas, and JM Mannion, all helped me, you know what I mean? And I said, for me, the biggest compliment, because everybody knew I was, you know, I was learning and I was struggling, and it was not something that I really enjoyed doing. But a couple of the team, you know, members said to me, you know, with the junior nationals, about, you know, who did I finally get to do with the IG, because you know it seemed like it really got better, and I was like, nope, it's the old lady right here.
Oh,
Um,
awesome. Good
yeah,
job.
no,
It's
I do. I
hard.
mean,
I was a promoter for 6 years and I did the social media side, and it's really tough to try to
well,
get
it
it
is
out
tough.
there.
Yeah, it is tough. And I still, you know, and actually maybe, you know, girls can let you know, but my, I always think one of my biggest strengths, and to the NPC, is A, obviously I'm social. I love meeting the athletes. Obviously, you know, I have more interaction with women, but I don't care, male, female. I love it, just, it's, it always has surprised me, like, what type of person we attract to this sport. Because, you know, when I first got into it, I think, and again, I can't say this for sure, but I think just at that time, more of the people that competed, at least the people around me that competed, were, I mean, they did have, you know, obviously regular jobs, but a lot of them were starting to be trainers and they worked out. They were just kind of what we considered back then gym rats, you know what I mean? But now our whole sport is, you know, has shifted. I mean, we have everything from CEOs to, you know, physicians and specialized physicians, anesthesiologists, surgeons. I know so many young girls that, you know, that are, you know, are really have, you know, have a careers that you just go like, what draws you to our stage? And so I've always enjoyed talking to athletes, you know, finding out, like I said, what brought them to here, especially, I'm sorry, the women, because most of them are mothers. Lots of them own businesses, or like I said, they have a professional, you know, they're a professional in a career, like whether it's a physician that's on their feet or a surgeon that's on their feet for 12 hours a day, and they have a couple of kids, and yet they can still, you know, get themselves prepped for a, you know, for a show. That's what's always amazed me.
What do you find is the common thread?
Oh, it's I think it's about I think it's people, because I think about this all the time now, especially as I get older. I think it's people that just want to challenge themselves. No, it wouldn't matter what they were doing, that they're you find out after talking to them that they're excellent in their career, you know, and you find out like they like well like with Whitney, I can you know that she's got two young boys. She's always been involved with their baseball and softball all through. So I just think it's people that are really focused and are gonna, no matter what they do, they're gonna do to the best, you know, of they're gonna give it their all. And I think part of that though is knowing that you've got to keep challenging yourself. And so I just think a lot of our athletes come from athletic backgrounds, or like now the Masters is one of our largest growing divisions, and I think it's because a lot of our, you know, our masters, they've, you know, they've raised their children, they're in college, or they're, you know, doing whatever they're doing in their lives, and now maybe they did not have that amount of time to focus on themselves, and now they can give them themselves that time, but they're still that kind of person that needs something to challenge them. So, you know, when you're raising your children and you're being parents, that's such a huge, that's the most important priority, I think, in anybody's life. But now that, you know, you've raised them and they're on, you know, making their own life, you need something else, you know, that's gonna, yeah, that's gonna fulfill you in that. And again, like I said, we have so many athletes, I mean, you know, competitors now that are coming from athletic backgrounds, you know, and how many athletes, once you get out of college, what do you do with that competitiveness? From a, you know, from that, from an athletic back, you know, from an athletic endeavor, like where do you go to fulfill that? And I think our sport, you know, gives that to, you know, a lot of our competitors.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm going to kind of switch gears because you mentioned masters, and we actually had a listener ask specifically what you kind of see in bikini masters competitors that's kind of different than the open.
Well, I think part of it is like, again, they're in a different part in their life. They, you know, I find out masters competitors for the most part, you know, again, when we talk, this is more general. There's always other, you know, there's always people that are here for different reasons, or, you know, they get on stage for, you know, for different reasons and stuff. But just generally, I find out with masters that, again, like, they can focus on themselves. So as long as they're not just starting out, like if, especially if they've come from an athletic background, because I think everybody sometimes forgets that, you know, your muscle has muscle memory. So even if you had more, excuse me, development when you were younger, you know what I mean? And then you weren't able to, you know, to spend the amount of time that you did when you were younger. But now, you know, with the kids and stuff, but now that's gone. Now you have time to go back. And, you know, I think people, again, look for something to challenge themselves. And so once they start, you know, if they, you know, get into the lifting or go and start going to the gym, they realize that a lot of that muscle memory is going to come back a lot, you know, a lot quicker. And I think our masters competitors, because they, you know, they are better, they're usually better, more stable in their financial life at that point and stuff. And like I said, they do have the time. So they, I find out our masters competitors compete a lot more than than some of our younger competitors. They are willing to travel. They want to see new places. You know, you have to remember too, and I think sometimes, I think as promoters, they forget, because like when I was growing up, like you, like the Pennsylvania State Contest, I knew, you know, athletes, especially men, that went there for 10, 15 years trying to win that one title. Well, that's not the way it is anymore in the world. Most of my master's competitors, they love to travel. If you go to the, you know, because I always, and this is what takes me sometimes with the email critiques, but when you go back, I always like to see where they come from and stuff, because you figure if you see, I see you did three shows in Alabama, I'm pretty sure you're, you know, you live in Alabama. Well, now I go and I, like, you did a show in, you know, in Texas, and you did a show in California, and you did a show in Washington, and I'm like, I'm not really sure where this athlete is from, but they have the means to do it. They like to travel, and because we have so many shows all over the country, I think that appeals to a lot of our masters, you know, competitor, you know, masters competitors. And, but I also have, you know, in another direction though too, I also have, I have competitors that are in the masters that were athletic and never, you know, because this is, you and I both know, this is a lifestyle. This is, I mean, don't get me wrong, a lot of people do it as a bucket list thing, you know what I mean, too. Right. But for a lot of people, for most people, especially if you're, you know, if you're an athlete, it becomes a way of life. The training and the nutrition and stuff. And so I've had so many masters competitors. I mean, I can think of a dozen right off the top of my head that when they had children, and this is male and female, they walked away from the competition part just because they couldn't justify the time or the money. But the minute the kids went off to school, I mean, to college, they came back. And I know four of them that have gotten their master's cards in the last couple of years because they never gave up the lifestyle. They just gave up the stage. And, you know, I say this all the time, Amy, don't get me wrong, because I obviously, competition is what, you know, is the hallmark of our organization, but we're going to be there. As you can see, we weathered that pandemic. We're going to weather anything. And so I tell athletes all the time, no matter where you are in your life, you know, you can walk away from the stage for a little bit. We're going to be here. You know, life, you can't, this will enhance your life. I don't care what you do in your daily life. This will enhance your life more than you believe, but it cannot become your life.
Yes, very well said. And one of the questions that we had was in regards to taking time off, if your feedback is that you need to grow, she kind of specifically asked, you know, does that mean like 2-3 months? Does that mean a year? What are some key things that that competitors can do when they get feedback from you saying that they need to, you know, add size?
Well, okay. Part of it is there's a couple different things. And this is why when people, unfortunately, like send me like a check-in photo that they send to their trainer and they send it to me like a month out and they say, you know, I'm doing the USA's. Do you think I'm going to be ready? That's an impossible question for me to answer. First of all, I've never trained athletes. Back then, we did not have the science that is out there, just with, you know, how the macros work. You know what I mean? How, I mean, I, you know, obviously, and I do want to say this real quick before I forget.
Okay.
What, once I started getting into bodybuilding when I was still anorexic, I will tell you, bodybuilding is what saved my life. Because coming through nursing and in the medical field, even till today, I'm sorry, they have no clue of nutrition. And I learned nutrition, healthy nutrition from the bodybuilding world. And so that's really what changed my life around. Yes, absolutely. I learned nutrition from the, you know. Now I just forgot, Amy, where our train of thought was there.
Oh, just if you get feedback after a show and you need to grow, I mean, what would you consider? She was kind of asking what keywords to listen for with feedback to gauge how much time they need to take off.
See, and that's something that's where it's hard. It would be hard for me to answer because I'd have to know a lot more than that because I don't know how, you know, did you come from athletic background? Cause then you're going to have muscle memory and you might maybe only need 3-4 months.
Okay.
But if you're someone like when I first started that didn't do anything, you know what I mean? And you're just starting out to build, you know, that baseline, you might take a year.
Okay.
You know, okay. And That's the, you know, so that's the one thing I, you know, I, it's, it, again, and like, I try to ask athletes too, what their priority is.
Yeah.
Because if your priority, like I'll say, somebody will say to me, oh, I qualified for, you know, Junior USA, you know, should I go? And I always say, well, what is your priority? Are you going there just for the experience? Or are you really going there and you're asking me, do I think you, at this point you're going to be, win the Junior USA or at least be in that first call out? And then depending on what their answer is, because if you're going for the experience, because maybe this was a, this whole thing was a bucket list thing to you, but now that you qualified and you see that you, you just want to go and do that, because I think last year taught all of us that there's no guarantees for tomorrow anyway.
Right.
And so to give that up, you might never get that chance again.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole different reason to go than I've been competing for 5 years and I don't want to go unless you think that at least from the, I look like I would be easy enough to at least crack that top five or win.
So it's very, you know, context dependent, which makes so much sense for sure.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about Junior USAs, I'm thinking it's crossing through my head as to how did they determine how many pro cards to give out? Like why, for example, USA is this last weekend, it goes to the top two in each class, and then Junior USAs is, you know, the overall, the top three. How do they determine that? Or is that just promoter specific?
Yes. No. It's actually contest specific. Okay.
Because
when we took over the Junior Nationals, our number of pro cards stayed the same. You have to go back to the history of our national shows. Okay. Because again, people always get, they think, a lot of people think Junior Nationals or Junior USA means an age thing. You know what I mean? And it's not. Mm-hmm. When they were first, you know, when they first came into being with the NPC, they were, you have to remember, only bodybuilding. They were like the entry level national shows. There was no pro, you know, there was no pro cards here. So it didn't matter.
Oh.
So promote, yeah, oh yeah, there was no pro cards. So it was like especially the men, the guys will get this much more than the women, because most of the men that became like, you know, the Phil Heaths and the, Lee Labrada's, Lee Labrada and stuff, because the NPC was it was all AAU back when he first competed and stuff. But a lot of, I mean, they're still the same name of the shows, but they were AAU shows. They weren't, you know, NPC shows. So they were developed so that athletes would know that this is like your entry level, like after the guys would go to the Junior USA 1 year and see how they did. And then whatever they had to do is, because you have to remember with guys, it's going to take them a lot longer because they have a lot more muscle they're going to try to pack on. So then they would come back. Maybe if they crack that top five, they would come back and try to win the Junior USA the next year. Or if they crack that top five, oh, they'll go to the Junior Nationals, because that was like the quality would be a step up. Like if you went to the Junior USA, it was, you know, like athletes just starting to get into the national level. Junior Nationals with athletes, the quality was just a little bit better there, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you got to like the USA and the Nationals, that was like the top quality. So you only went there when you were at that quality. That's how that all came about, because Yeah, Nationals was the only show at the time you could get a pro card from.
It's interesting, too, how when you say that, it makes sense, because that's where they land in the calendar year. So it's almost like you're leveling up the further along you go into. And I find that it seems like, you know, athletes, they start out at a certain condition at the beginning of the year, and then they've kind of like fine-tuned things by the time. Well, it used to be in November, but now it's in December in Orlando, but with Nationals. But that's interesting.
Yeah.
I never knew that that's why those landed on that calendar year and why they were called Junior. That's so funny.
Yeah, that's exactly, absolutely. It was all a quality thing, not, a, you know, had nothing to do with age or anything.
Okay.
And then obviously as our sport grew, especially when we started adding the fitness, and then, you know, figure came into being and stuff, and the contest grew. Well, promoters, you know, guys were already promoting these shows and stuff. And again, with as many athletes we had just to give out, because all it was class winners at Nationals. So to give out just that tiny little bit, because we had more and more promoters that wanted to do, pro shows. Well, we wouldn't even have enough pros in the country to do those shows, not multiple shows, you know what I mean, and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then they started increasing the number thing. And again, it's a business. And so the promoters that promote these shows, they pay just like, you know, like a regional every regional show pays the same amount of money to the NPC to be able to put NPC in the title of their show.
Sure, okay? For their sanction.
Yes, and it's a flat fee, and you know whatever, and that's it. That's what you know. Jim always said. Then the promoters are going to make the NPC better because they're going to be working for themselves. Because the harder they work, the better they promote. They're going to make more money. You know, the NPC doesn't take anything other than that flat. Mm-hmm. You know, thing. Well, the different levels of shows because they attracted the national shows because they attracted you know more athletes as you went up the line. Those promoters paid more money for that sanction. Yes. And so then when they started adding pro cards, they added it to the shows that the you know, that the sanction fee was more than the one before it. So that's kind of where that came from. And because you have to remember too, in the beginning, Masters Nationals, it would be here for a year and then nobody wanted to promote it because there was no Masters competitors. And oh man, I can remember when I used to go out to Pittsburgh because I still lived in outside Philly and I'd do Gary's show and there'd be like, I don't know, 75, 80 people in the master.
From this last year. That's so funny.
And for a couple of years, Jim couldn't even find a promoter for the masters. Wow. And the North American was the same way. Brad and Elaine promoted that show out of Washington for a couple years and then they didn't want to do it anymore because they were doing their local shows and stuff and they were raising children too and Jim couldn't find a promoter for that show either. And you know, so yeah, times have, you know, but this is where, you know, the world changes, times change, and you know, thank God we've grown. And you know, I do attribute that all to Jim. I mean, he just, again, not even thinking that the NPC would go anywhere where it did. And I know because a lot of people don't, but I'm telling you, it's always been about the athlete. And that's why I tell athletes all the time, if you have ideas or if you think something's not right or if you think something is would be a better idea, you know, especially now with, you know, with email, let the office know. I mean, that's, you know, when Bikini and Men's Physique came in, Men's Physique was around for about a year and Jim kept getting all these emails about, you know, about why can't we just do, because I guess overseas they were doing what is now classic bodybuilding, you know, our classic physique. And, you know, and Jim was kind of like, oh, I just don't think we need to go there type thing. But, you know, he had enough, you know, athletes inquire, you know, say that they would really like that. So he thought, we'll give it a try. And same thing with wellness. He didn't want anything to do with wellness, but the athletes are who drove that. And I mean, like I said, I think it's the best thing that happened to us because it's, you know, appeal to a lot of women that don't have that structure to be, you know, with the wider shoulders and the nice taper and stuff. Wellness is just, you know, we have, like I said earlier, we have so many female athletes that come from athletic backgrounds that have so much muscle in their lower body that once they get involved in our sport, they struggle, whether it's bikini or figure or women's physique, trying to find that balance. Cause for those divisions, you need that symmetry, you need that balance. And wellness is going to appeal to a huge population of women that now do not have to, you know what I mean? Not have to struggle to find that balance in their, you know, in their physiques. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you brought me into the perfect part of my next questions. And that's just, if you could, for our beginners, because we have a lot of new people that are just thinking about the sport and entering in. So can you kind of tell us what they're looking for in bikini and kind of how that look has evolved over the years? And there's a lot of questions in this. Kind of what the future holds with having wellness now in the mix and kind of the difference between conditioning with wellness and bikini. And then we can kind of start diving into a little bit of figure and physique if you don't mind. I know I just threw a bunch of questions at you.
No, not at all. You have to remember in bikini, you still, cause we are a physique organization. So I think this is where sometimes, you know, trainers and women, especially in the beginning, didn't get it, but you have to have a certain level of development underneath. I'm always going to promote muscular development for women because I learned, like I said, early in life and saved my life that, you know, as we put muscle on, it's going to A, increase your metabolism. It's going to, it's good for your bone density, which again, when you're 20, you don't think about, but when you're my age, it's so cool when I go and my bone density is still in the norm. But it's going to make it, it's going to make you more healthier as you get older. Conditioning is to get on stage and it's for one day. And so I'm always going to promote, even though always people always go, but she doesn't like a lot of muscle. I like muscle, but we, you know, I like only a certain amount for the different divisions, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And stuff. And that's one thing too, that I think it's hard for people to understand, that you can have the best physique on stage right now, but you don't have to win your, that show or the class, because it's not the best physique for that division that you're competing in. So to go back what you said about bikini. So you have to have a certain amount of development underneath, because that's what gives all of us our body shape. Okay. So you do have to, you know what I mean? And yeah, and again, this is athletes grow, you know, we change a little bit, society evolves, but yeah, obviously there's more muscle now on bikini than there was when we started 10 years ago, whenever it was. Mm-hmm. But we're still not looking, and this is where I do this at my seminars all the time. First of all, you have to remember the galleries are not showing anybody what judges see on stage. Okay. Yes, it gives me an idea of the level of quality there, but I will tell you, all the photographers use filters now because they want your photos to look good, because they want you to buy them and stuff. You can't judge off of photos. I can, you know, that's why I take the notes that I take, because you can go from one show where an athlete looks like she in a photo that she's on the smaller side, because this happened to me once, and then I'm telling her as a figure competitor, you need to add a little bit more muscle, you know what I mean? Then I judged her 2 months later in person, and she almost had too much muscle for figure. Okay. It's because, yes, it's the angle of the photos, the lighting, that's the photographer's taking the photos. So I always tell athletes, photos generally, like 99.9% of the time, are going to make you look bigger, and they're going to make you look definitely tighter than you actually do on stage to the judges. So my thing to athletes all the time, no matter what division you're getting ready for, if you're getting ready off of photos, like you're trying, you're like, okay, I look like this girl, you know, my conditioning looks like this girl does in the photos, I should do good, I will be tell you, you're going to be too hard. And that's the biggest thing, because with social media now, we all post pictures, you know, after the show and go, how did this person beat this person? I've looked at photos from the shows that I've judged, and I look at them, I go, what the heck did we do? And then you have to remember in your mind, no, that's not exactly what it looked like. I mean, is it in the ballpark? Yes, but it's not exactly. And the photos are 3D. You're not seeing the person's personality. And other than bodybuilding, you're that elusive stage presence and all that, it does play a part. And we've always been very open about that. You know what I mean? It's not like bodybuilding where it's just a bunch of body parts and how they're put together and how conditioned you are. All the other divisions, like especially like fitness, had a huge stage personality component into it. You know what I mean? And stuff. And it's the same thing with, you know, with bikini. Bikini was never just about your physique. It was about that whole overall package and how that athlete presented it on stage. So some people are going to have an advantage because they are a lot more animated and they feel a lot more comfortable on stage because of their background.
Okay.
Yes. And so I find out a lot of times I see a lot more conditioning in all the divisions at the regional shows that we don't see at the Olympia, and we're not picking at the Olympia. And that's my biggest thing sometimes to trainers and to athletes. Like, again, don't get me wrong. Sometimes you have to pick the harder person, you know, because they're the only one, they're the best there that day. Remember, you have to give your first place to somebody. Mm-hmm. But it's not my ideal, so that the judges are always worrying with, okay, this person is softer or smaller, this person's harder. Okay, how far is the harder, more muscular person away from? And I always say the ideal is, like I always say, you look at your Olympia winners in those classes. I always say, like, they're the top of the top. You know what I mean? Like, right. You don't want to go bigger than them in a division. You don't want to go harder than them in a division. You know what I mean? And so if I think the harder one is kind of still closer to the ideal because the softer, smaller one is just really far out, I'm going to go with that harder person, even though they're too hard for, you know, for that division, but they're the best there that day. Okay. And that you know, and that's hard for me sometimes to explain to athletes and trainers. And it's hard sometimes with my new judges. They have a hard time with that because you're not judges, especially now, you know, with Jim's grandson, Tyler, he is really, really did an amazing job with our whole judging panel and our process and stuff, especially with, you know, our expansion overseas and stuff. And so we really have extensive training now for our, you know, for our judge, you know, for the judging panels and stuff. And, you know, so it's my judges that judge at the national level, it's just hard to explain to somebody that there's just a difference in the look. It's the density of the muscle that changes from a bikini competitor to a figure competitor to a women's physique, and also that conditioning. You know what I mean? But if you look at, like, even if you get to women's physique and you look at Sarah, I mean, our women's physique Olympia winner, she's lean, but she's not that. Again, in the photo, she looks really striated, but she's not on stage. I tell people all the time, full muscle bellies, I'm going off on a tangent here, but full muscle bellies and separation is always going to, I think, serve you well in our sport, especially over longevity. Getting super conditioned is never, and I will be honest with you, I hate when I see women that I know have gone to trainers. I mean, not a trainer, but any trainer. And did you know, so many of our athletes, you know, I'm assuming are, you know, with somebody, and that I see that they're super, super lean and conditioned. And again, it could be just them. They could have been like me with the anorexia, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, but I hate to see that, because that is not what the sport is about. It's about building muscle and being healthy. It really is. You know, does that change for the day of the show? Yeah. You know what I mean? People drop water and they do all the crazy things, but the longevity of it is, if you add muscle, you're going to be healthier, you know, and more, you know, and more actually physically fit, you know, not for a sport, but just for daily life, you know, as you get older.
Yeah. So with all of that being said, I had found, like, interesting when we talked after USA's that you give grades. So is that when they do the first comparison round, is that when you kind of grade them? And then when you write the detailed notes, is that when they're doing their individual? And then you kind of look at the grade and then do the call outs? Is that how that works?
Absolutely. This is how it works. Everybody in the beginning kept getting, you know, upset that we were doing the lineups first in the big, you know, in the big shows. You only need the lineups when you're going to have, you know, you're going to split a class on stage. Because if there's eight of you and you're always going to be in the same lineup, well, I don't need to see you ahead of time, because the only reason for the lineups is we don't want to miss anybody. That's the whole point of it. And so when you come out at any given show, we have no, I mean, you have an idea of where you think the quality should be at that show, but you have no idea. So when that first person comes out individually, is that person the best, the worst? I don't care who you are. If you're just doing, if you have 40 people in a class and you're just doing individuals first, I will be honest with you, just human nature, you're comparing them against an ideal in your head, because you have no idea where the quality of that show is. Because, you know, again, you're not judging somebody on that Olympia person. You're judging that person on the people that he's or they're with in that class. Mm-hmm. So if you come out in a lineup, it gives me a real quick idea of where the quality in this class is. So that when that first person does come back out, because I've gone through this past weekend at the USA, I've gone through some classes where, you know, I'll look and because I put little, you know, like I said, little dots by the people that I think that are going to, you know, obviously be in that first, you know, call out or look really good. And I could have eight people out of 40 and I'll look and I'll go, oh my God, I got 17. People that I think would be really good, because it depends. Well, but it depends on the quality mm-hmm. of how many show up in that, you know, and that part from an athlete standpoint is just luck of the draw. You have no idea who's going to come, who's going to be your height. You know what I mean? That's just the luck of the draw. And so, but then when you come out individually, now I have an idea of what the quality in that class is going to be. And I also am judging you against, because I know most of these athletes, if they get their pro card, they're going to go to the pro, you know what I mean? Yeah. So then I'm also making notes on what you're going to need to do, what I think you need to do, make that step up to that next level and stuff. But now I just find out that from my standpoint, because one of, and I will tell you, almost every judge I judge with you will tell you the same thing. The biggest thing that would that like devastates us is when we've missed an athlete. You know what I mean? And I mean from the point that you might, and people know, because I've done this plenty of times. Like, you know, you get to that second or third call out and you go, oh my God, there's one athlete that is like so much better in this group than anybody else. And that's why we've said, well, lots of times we've said we've gotten better at it. So now we don't do it as much, but we always say, you know, you go off stage to the right, but hang out. Because I have brought back, and I've had trainers come to me and they'll say, you know, you think you missed my one athlete? I said, yep, I brought them back with a higher group because I wanted them to take a look at it. Do they fit in that group or are they even better than that group? And then I brought them back with the first call outs. And, you know, so it's that, but I just find with, when we do the lineups like that and see the quality that, and that's why we've gotten so much better at it. We don't, you know, we are much more accurate on who belongs in that first call out. And again, people think all the time, the head judge is not the person that decides who that first call out is. Every judge on stage is passing down 5, 6, 7, 8, because the quality of our shows have grown so much. So lots of times now we vary, unless it's, like I said, unless it's something really out of the ordinary, we're always calling out 6, 8, or 10 people in a class. And I always say to athletes, you can tell really if, you know, we call out 6, quality is average in your class. If we're calling out 8 or 10, that means the quality is unbelievable, because you have all these judges passing in who they think belong in that top call out. As a head judge, I make Roman numerals next to you. I've showed it to athletes. Steve does it. Tyler does it. And then we call out based on that. Now, as a head judge, if I think I missed, you know, if they missed somebody or I thought somebody else, you know, I'll throw somebody else in, because our mantra is always, you know, we know what that first call out means to so many athletes. So it's always, we'd rather call out too many than miss somebody. And even if we think that they maybe don't belong in there, we just know how much it means to an athlete to be able to get that first call out. So, you know, we're very, you know, we're very conscious of that. But it comes from all the judges. It doesn't, because I, at the USA, or not the USA, because I actually left, I hate myself for doing it, but I, it was my anniversary, I had to. But I, that's why when I talk to athletes backstage, I'll say, oh my God, you got first in your class. And they look at me and they go, no, I didn't. I got second, Sandy. I'm like, oh yeah, well, I had you first. Because I have, you know, I have my notes and my scores on my paper. So, but I don't, I, lots of times I haven't seen the official, you know, scores. And so I don't remember, you know, sometimes from class to class who won, but I try to tell them that's what I'm telling you. And if you go look at the scores, yeah, it's 4-5, 6-9. It wasn't unanimous. You know what I mean? And the head judge is not the deciding factor as many people think. It, we always have an odd number of judges, 7, 9, 11. We have 13 at the, you know, at the Olympia. And that's why another thing too, I always say to athletes, because some athletes will say, I never do well in front of this judge. That's fine, but it's one judge. We knock out, when you start with 7 judges, we knock out 1 high, 1 low. But when you go to 9 judges, we're knocking out 2 highs and 2 lows. When you get to nationals and we're doing 11, we're doing 3 highs and lows. So you can have 3 people that don't like you think in your mind, you think on that panel, they're going to get knocked out.
Okay.
And also too, from a judging standpoint, we now monitor our judging process and the accuracies of our judges. And you know what I mean? So I will tell you, a judge would really not have to lot, like, because he's going to put his judging credentials on the line. So, like I said, did it happen 30 years ago, 20 years ago? Yeah, it might have. You know what I mean? In some regional shows, local shows. But I will tell you, the judging process now is it's just, it became more scientific, just like our whole sport has.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yes. Yes. We have a very detailed, you know, judging process on to become a national judge, to become a pro judge. And, you know, and I'm just, as much as I'm thankful that that people like to become athletes in our sport, it's the same way with judging. It's, you know, that we have so many people that, thank God, that have really, they just like to be part of the sport. And they, you know, they are no longer going to compete, or maybe they never competed. They just enjoy the sport. They live the lifestyle. They're just not getting on stage, but they love, just like me, they love to be competitive with the judging. So they're, you know, and we're fortunate to have a lot of judges at that, you know, at that level right now.
Yeah. Okay. So I have kind of like an off topic, bunch of questions about hair. So, somebody had asked, you know, on a small frame, is it better to have curly or straight? If they're more muscular, is there a preference curly or straight? One person asked about whether or not they should shave one side of their head in bikini for symmetry purposes. Another one asked why there aren't many redheads that are pros or that you see on stage at a national level.
Oh my God. Oh so, my God.
A lot of questions on hair.
But you know what? It's just so funny because it all, I'm trying to say this in a nice way. I think sometimes that athletes, trainers, whoever, I think you look for reasons like why you might not have done as well. Mm-hmm. And it becomes, well, it was my hair or it was my this or my that. And I will be honest with you, 99.9, it had nothing to do with that. I'm telling you, I had, you know, same thing. I had Jasmine Gonzalez who straightened her hair for numerous years, which is a horrendous process, according to her. And when I happened to see her in a photo, I'm like, why wouldn't you come? Your hair looks gorgeous. Well, people told me. I always like when I say people because I never know who the people are. But the judges don't like it. I'm like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard of. I guess that, and I say this in my seminars, in all honesty, okay? The first and foremost, one of the things that attracts us to an athlete on stage is their confidence in themselves. Not the arrogant confidence, but just that confidence that you know you are better today than you were whenever you started. And I will tell you, that comes through. So if it's the pink hair, the shaved head, whatever it is, the redhead, the purple hair, if that's what adds to that confidence that you feel inside, if that's what makes you, when you look in the mirror and you like that look, then please bring that to the stage. Because I will tell you, it will come through in the way you stand on stage. The way I will tell you, Janet Leyla won the Olympia based just, I mean, obviously her body was good, but her body was good the last couple of years. I just think in my heart, Janet knew she nailed it. Mm-hmm. And she came out and posed amazingly, carried herself amazingly. That's the kind of thing that it's, an elusive thing. I know it sounds dumb, but I am telling you, it comes through. We've had girls come on stage with shaved heads that probably nobody, but they come on and you know, they're in their minds, they're like, I love this look. I know I look great. And it draws you to them. Now, again, if you're 19, 20, 21, and I don't mean to say anything about age here, but I can't because I'm old, but, and you have pink and blue hair, it probably looks adorable on you. Now, if you're my age and you have pink and blue hair, it probably doesn't look adorably at that point. So maybe those kind of things you might want to look at. But I am telling you, you need girls, especially women, they need to wear what makes them feel good about themselves. Now, I will say to you sometimes, you know, I can see where trainers would go off and say, if you're really thin up top, especially in your back and stuff, because, you know, bikini, we're looking for shape. We're not looking for that, you know, the muscular development or non-muscular development in your back. So if you have longer hair, it might cover up some of that leanness because you need to get a little bit tighter for your glutes, but you end up getting a little bit too tight up top. You know what I mean? Because you don't have the development yet up there. So I can see where that type of thing can play, you know, could play a part. But for the big overall general question is if you like the way you look, then I would wear it on stage.
Awesome.
Real quick, another thing too, because I get this question all the time, and is about, do I belong in wellness, bikini, figure? Okay. That's such a personal question because I have girls will say to me, I've not been able to train legs for like 3 years, but I love training legs, you know, but I stopped because I needed, you know, to bring my upper body up. And I'm like, but they, you know, they said, do you think wellness will be good? And I say to them, but you like training legs. You like the muscle. Oh, yeah, I loved it. Well, then you answered your question.
Mm, yeah, I like that.
The same thing I get with bikini girls will say to me about, I know I'm not balanced and my trainer says I belong in wellness. I said, do you want to look like a wellness competitor? No, I don't like all that muscle. Then why would you even consider it? You're going to get on stage once, twice, three, maybe five times a year. But you're going to look at yourself the other 360 days a year. Why would you ever change your body for a trophy.
Yeah.
Maybe again, like with me, I didn't have the structure to be bodybuilders, and you might be fighting your structure in a division, but if you like your look and you like, you know what I mean? And you can, but then you have to be realistic too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. On where you're going to go in that division, but to change your, you know, to change, especially when you're talking about a lot of muscle versus a little muscle. Like I said to one of our pro bikini competitors, you know, maybe 8-9 years ago, something about, I just think you could do well in figure. And she looked at me and she said, Sandy, I'm a model. Can't even do it. But you know what I mean? Yeah. But it took me, I was like, I never even thought about it. Because you have to, again, what goes on in your life and what's your career and what you want to look like. That's, this sport's supposed to help you look better and like yourself, not change it just to get a trophy.
That's great perspective. That's awesome. Yes. Very good. Okay. So we also had questions about tan. So there was a question about what types of things about the tan have you ever marked down for people? Should their face match their body? And then what are your thoughts about tattoos covering them up and how they impact scores with symmetry?
Okay. First of all, tattoos, for the most part, don't affect your scores from the point that, first of all, don't cover them up. You can never cover up a tattoo well enough that we don't know there's a tattoo underneath. And the makeup bases and the things that you need to put on top of it to cover it up takes away from some of the depth of your muscularity and your condition. So I'm telling you, we just had somebody covered up their whole back at the USA, and every judge on the panel looked at me and said, make sure you tell that person there's no reason to cover it up, only because we know it ends up hurting you rather than helping you. Judges don't care if we see tattoos. You know, you're 18, 19, again, 25 years old, everybody has tattoos. Judges don't like athletes with tattoos. That's so ridiculous. It's a dumb answer. So tattoos, don't cover them up. Okay. Sometimes girls will have a band, a tattoo, like some kind of a band, like flowers or something around their leg or something. Could that throw the symmetry of your legs off a little bit? Yeah, it could. But, you know, there's not much you're going to do about that. And I just think it's such a small part. I really don't think it's going to affect you in the, you know, in the long run. Now, I forget what else besides tattoos did you just ask me? Because now I'm losing my train of thought here.
Anything about the tan, are there any major things about the tan that they could get marked down, and then should it match their face?
No. Okay. Guys and women, from what I gather, and this is me talking to, you know, because I know nothing about the tanning process. I really don't. But I do know you don't want your face tan. You don't want to match your face to your body. You want to match it to a degree. But you want it, if everybody tells me, the makeup artists that are really good at their job, they really say that you want to have one shade lighter than the rest of your body. Okay. I have some athletes that, some of the pros that do the DIY, they do an amazing job. But it's, again, it's something that you really, again, have to take the time to know your body and stuff. I will tell you, I don't care whether it's, you know, LSR, Protan, Jantan, or whatever you use. Whatever their process is, because I do know every one of those tanning companies send you a process, pre-tan process to follow. I will tell you, I know it can be time consuming. People think, oh, how much difference can it make? I will tell you, it makes a huge difference on the way the tan chemicals adhere to your skin. So whatever that process is, at least when you're first starting out, follow it to the T. Because they know what's going to make their product look better on skin. So, and also I tell athletes, you know, as you, again, if you compete for years and you belong to big teams and they do the DIY on some of them, but when you're first starting out, to me, and everybody knows, I'm not a big proponent of you need 5 pairs of shoes and 5 different suits, but I think tan and makeup, especially for women, is so important those first couple shows, because you don't know anything about stage lighting. You don't know about how dark the makeup wants to be, that type of thing. So I really think, and you've done all that work. So if you can, again, if you can't, that's a whole different, but if you can afford it, I would do it, just because, like I said, a bad tan can affect, you know, your scoring on stage. And hair and makeup, you know, the not so much the hair, but the makeup can. excuse me, just because of you know, the lights, and you don't want it to be too bright. One thing I will tell people, I don't think if you have a red suit on, you need red glitter eyeshadow on.
Okay.
It's really just you want your face to like not have a neutral color, because you want to have some color, but you don't want it to be, you don't want it to be, what do I want to see, fighting
Matching.
against your suit color. Yes, you don't want, yes, you want it to blend in more and highlight rather than glare at you.
Okay. That
I,
makes
you know,
sense.
and we're seeing a lot of that now with dark blue glitter eyeshadow and that and stuff. In fact, I just saw somebody match their the bling in their shoes to their suit this past weekend. Again, I even asked Tyler, because you know, I get asked, he did a seminar with me in Texas a couple weeks ago, and I got asked about the shoes, and I said, and I firmly believe this, I know why people don't do it, so not everybody go out, but you could go buy a cheap pair of black heels. It's not going to affect your placement. I will be honest with you. Tyler even said to me, I never get past their knees, Sandy. Why would I be looking at their shoes? And I'm like, I know that's the quality of our athlete is so, it's so much, it's so high right now that I'm telling you, we could care less what color your shoes are. I, like I said, I understand the idea with, you know, color, I mean, with the clear, because, you know, it, then it doesn't, contrast with your, you know, with your skin and with the rest of your physique. But I'm telling you, in all honesty, it really doesn't matter. And you, I see this more when I go overseas, because girls over there, especially in wellness, they wear gold, they wear silver, they wear ankle bands on their shoes, have ankle bands and stuff. Doesn't affect anything that we judge with them. And I just know it started here. And you know, and like I said, I'm not advocating that somebody go out and do it, but I'm just saying, I think everybody puts too much emphasis on the different hair colors, the different shoes, that it's a bigger emphasis than from a judging standpoint than we put on it at all.
Yeah. Well, I want to be respectful of your time, and I appreciate all of your so amazing advice. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you just want to share with the listeners and make sure that they know, or advice to, you know, future competitors or current competitors trying to go for their pro card?
You know, again, some people you have to remember, some, I think some, depending, you know where you came from, like where you started your journey. Okay. You don't know where everybody else started the journey, because you know, it can get very frustrating when I have competitors that have been competing for 10 years and they finally get their pro card, or they maybe they haven't yet. And then you see a young girl come in and she gets her pro card in, you know, her first show. And sometimes that can be daunting, you know, daunting for competitors. But again, you know, I've had competitors. I had a girl down in Florida a couple of years ago. She won the teenage division in the overall bikini. She won the novice bikini overall. She won the open bikini overall. She was 17,
Wow.
and I said yes. And they introduced me to her parents. And first thing I said to her mom was, "Where'd your daughter get her legs and her glutes?" And she said to me, "Well, she's been playing soccer since she's been 4 years old."
Yeah.
Well, if you're somebody that's never lifted or never what had an athletic background, this 17-year-old already has 13 years of training on you. And I think sometimes women, especially, are too hard on themselves. They, it's hard to, you know, because they, we all do. We look at placements on a stage. We look at, well, you've been, you know, competing 3 years. I've been competing eight. You know what I mean? You're doing better. You know what I mean? It's because we all are competitive, but you still have to put it in perspective, because nobody knows where you came from but you, and nobody knows what your journey was but you. So as long as you know you're better every time you step on stage, then you're a winner. But also saying that too, sometimes too, you do have to try, because we all know you, no matter who you're with or what kind of program you're following, your body is going to get used to whatever it is. Okay. It's not going to respond the same now, 5 years from now, to the same training methods, the same, you know, nutrition and stuff, because your body's going to change it. It's going to get used to, our bodies are the best machines in the world. And so they're going to get used to whatever you're, you know, you're doing to it. So you do sometimes have to, you know, think outside the box, try something different. And unfortunately, sometimes you can only try, you're never going to be able to try it in the off season. You know what I mean? You're not going to get ready for the show that you're not getting ready for, you know, that it's not really a show. So sometimes you, excuse me, you have to try that one thing, or when you're getting ready for a show, and sometimes it works, but then sometimes you go like, oh man, it worked for everybody else in my team, it just doesn't work for me. And that's a hard lesson sometimes, because you put so much into a show, but sometimes you need to make those changes to see how they're going to affect you, and it might help your athlete, your physique get to that next level, but it could also maybe not. But there's, there's no way to know that until you actually try it. And again, I think sometimes it's really hard for athletes to do that. Also too, I'm just going to say one thing just about this is, I will tell you, I have never in my life recommended a trainer. Okay. That's just the way I am. I have good friends that are trainers. I've never have. I just think it's a conflict of interest for me, and I've never done it. And I think it's such a personal thing, because I don't care who you are, you don't know any, I don't know any other person that well, except, my husband. So I'm never going to tell somebody to go. I tell athletes, especially young girls, you have social media now, please. You follow, everybody follows certain pros or certain national competitors on social media. Pick out four or five people that you just like how they present themselves on social media, what they talk about, what their lives are, what they're it's involved in their day-to-day livelihood and stuff, and contact them and say, can I ask you who is your trainer or coach? And then pick up a phone and call those four or five people. Have a conversation. Please don't do it over the internet, because it's like going, to look for a doctor. When I had my hip done, I looked for five or six doctors, but I went to every one of their offices. I met them, and you're going to click with somebody. You want to ask them about how they get ready for peak week. What do they believe? I just know that the athletes that have the better trainers that know what they're doing, those athletes are not telling me they're living on 700 calories and they're not doing 3-4 hours of cardio a day. I will tell you, the girls that I talk to at the Olympia, they can't eat all the food that they're supposed to eat. Now, again, they might not like it. Not telling you're going to like the food that you're eating, but you're not starving and you're not running your physique to the ground, your body to the ground. That's just my two cents. And I traveled with most of, a lot of the top girls. And I will tell you, like truck drivers, good food, but they're, because you learn to feed your body all day. That's what makes us healthy. And, this doing a show and going up 30 pounds and then living on seven, that's not why I personally got into the sport. And that's not something I'm ever, I'm never going to highlight, because I know so many, I know thousands of girls that are so much healthier because of the sport. And that's, what I want, to happen to other girls.
I love that. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a wonderful, wonderful episode. You have given us so many golden nuggets. So thank you so much for your time and all you do for the sport. You truly are such an ambassador and just an amazing person. So thank you so much.
Okay. And thank, oh my God, thank you for having me. And the other thing is, like I said, everybody knows this. I think the NPC is missing their mark here. We should take the 50 bikini competitors from the Masters, Pro Masters every year and highlight them all over the NPC and say, do you want to look like this at 50? Join us.
Yes. So good. I love that. Absolutely. So that concludes this episode. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger. And you can find us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini. Please let us know what you thought of the episode by leaving a rating or a review. And you can apply for the team at glamgirlbikini.com by hitting the Get Started button. Thanks for listening, guys.